The following is an encore presentation.
Welcome to Access Utah. I'm Tom Williams. Tattoos are subject for the hour today. Have you noticed more people choosing tattoos these days? Tattoos, it seems, are more prevalent, but are they going mainstream? What do tattoos mean to the people who have them and to the larger culture? On today's program, I'll be talking with University of Connecticut sociology professor Clinton Sanders, author of Customizing the Body, The Art and Culture of Tattooing. We'll also speak with a tattoo artist in the Logan area, James Zena, owner of Sailor Jim's Electric Tattoo in Logan. We'll be talking with a woman who's having her tattoos removed, Ashley Hart. And we'll talk with a dermatologist, Dr. Robert Young, in Logan.
Support for Access Utah comes from Crum Brothers Artisan Bread at 300 South and 300 West in Logan. Now open Monday through Saturday until 2, offering a changing menu of a specialty salad, French breakfast pastries with local seasonal fruits, and lunch sandwiches. The following is an encore presentation.
Welcome to Access Utah. I'm Tom Williams. Have you noticed that more people are choosing tattoos these days? Something I think I've noticed. And in fact, statistics, I believe, bear that out. Increasing prevalence of tattoos. But what do tattoos mean? Are tattoos going mainstream? What do tattoos mean to the people who have them and to the larger culture? And we're going to talk about this subject, many different aspects, including the history of tattooing. We're bringing in right now University of Connecticut sociology professor Clinton Sanders, author of Customizing the Body, The Art and Culture of Tattooing. We'll also be speaking with a tattoo artist, a dermatologist later in the program, and a woman who's having her tattoos removed. Professor Sanders, welcome to the program. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you, Tom. It's good to be here.
I was curious to know how you got into this subject. The reading in the preface to your book, I believe for you, it started with interest in piercings?
Yeah, I was interested in piercings as a kind of body alteration, but my interest in tattooing really started when I was in San Francisco in the late 70s and was wandering around looking at museums, and they happened to have a tattoo art museum in San Francisco. I went in there and became really fascinated with the practice and, like many people, impulsively got my first tattoo at the tattoo studio that was attached to the museum. I was interested in talking with the tattoo artist that he was very closed-mouthed about the whole process, very secretive, and that made me even more interested. And the kind of sociological work I do is, I'm an ethnographer. It means I collect data by hanging out with the people I'm interested in. So I went to a tattoo studio not far from my office when I got home and started hanging out there. And I began to realize that the topic, the area, combined two of my particular professional interests. That is, an interest in social deviance and an interest in the sociology of art. What is art? How is art made? And those kinds of things.
We'll definitely talk about at least those two aspects of this. I was interested in reading, definitely for many tattooed persons, they refer to themselves as tattooed persons. This is a self-identifier. It's a process of identification, isn't it?
Yes, it is for many people, particularly for people who get involved in being what are called tattoo collectors, that is, to have a lot of work and often a lot of large work done. But what became very interesting to me was the kind of bimodal way that tattooing worked, certainly at that time, somewhat less now because it's become more of a popular culture fad, as you pointed out. But at the time, tattooing was both a mark, what I call a mark of affiliation, and a mark of disaffiliation. It was a way of saying to straight people, I'm not like you. I'm different. I'm separated from conventionality. But it also, as you point out, connected people with those who were tattooed. I am a tattooed person. This is a practice that I share with these other people who are interested in the things I'm interested in.
So you're, and probably still, even though it's kind of becoming more mainstream, you write in the book, it's still useful to look at tattoos through the lens of deviance, which is a separation from the larger culture. But in the past, at least, for some tattooed persons, it has been, I don't know what you'd call it, a protest, or at least I'm separating from the larger culture.
Yeah, it's separating from the larger culture, and still to a certain extent does that. A recent study of people who do hiring on campuses found that about 90% of them said that people with obvious facial tattoos or obvious piercings, that they would not be interested in hiring them. So unless you're working at a local Starbucks or someplace like that, probably... piercing is facial piercing and facial tattooing is still seen as a deviant practice. It turns people off. But early on, of course, tattooing back in the 18th and 19th century, tattooing was associated with people who were really on the boundaries of society. It was associated with sailors and criminals and prostitutes and people like that.
So, statistics from your book, and this was written around, 2008 or so, the new edition of the book.
Yeah.
From the 1990s, when the first edition came out, anywhere between 3 and 10%, I believe this is kind of the younger demographic, had tattoos, now some 24%. So that definitely has been an increase. Why the increase?
Well, the increase... it's become popular culture. Popular culture is an interesting phenomenon in that the people who make popular culture have a problem. And that problem is called commercial uncertainty. They don't know exactly what's going to really make it as a commercial product. So what they're constantly doing is looking for new commercial products. A lot of what they do, of course, creating popular culture products is make versions of what already has proved successful. It's very formulaic. But they're also looking for new things. And a major place that they look for new things is in kind of marginal societies, youth society, poor neighborhoods in urban areas and things like that. So as such then, tattooing has moved in to popular culture. It's moved into the culture, the larger culture, in part because we begin to see it more on people who are in the media. You see it on celebrities. You see it on tattooing on sports figures and so on. But probably more importantly, tattooing is becoming more common because more people have tattoos. And as more people have tattoos, more people come in contact, direct contact with people, particularly friends, who have tattoos. So it spreads as a kind of contagion in those interpersonal networks.
So now with this becoming a little more mainstream, I'm sure there are still people who want to separate out into a subculture, want to outrage society as a whole. What do you do? What are the options for people then if tattooing is becoming more mainstream?
You know, that becomes a problem. And what one has to do, of course, is to escalate the symbols of outrage. And that's what's really interesting to me these days is how people do that. So what you begin to see is people taking fairly extreme steps to alter their bodies in ways that say, that in essence, allow one to thumb one's nose at conventional society. So people are having surgical implants. How about having surgical implants of beads over your eyebrows? Or surgical implants of horns? Or there are these people called bagel heads that have had surgical implants of bagel-shaped bladders put into their foreheads, the skin under their foreheads. And that becomes rather shocking to conventional society. It becomes shocking to relatively unconventional society as well. But it certainly sets people apart provides them with, I guess, the kind of identity-stoking attention that they desire.
Hmm. Now, as I was thinking about this, I was curious as to, in some portion of this, if you get a tattoo or maybe you want to go even further and do something like you were just talking about, you're separating yourself from the norm. You're separating yourself from the norm, whatever the cultural norm has come to be. Are there norms within that subculture, the tattoo subculture? Are there, people who go beyond the pale of what that subculture thinks is correct?
Well, certainly for tattoo artists, there were... the conventional tattoo artists in the time I was doing the major data collection were fairly clear about the kinds of things they would do or would not do. And we're clear about the kinds of expectations they had about their customers. So there were those kinds of rules that constrained tattooing. There are certainly values within the larger world of tattooing that are fairly important values, particularly values that constrain what tattoo collectors do. Now, tattoo collectors are those who, as the term implies, are people who have a lot of work and usually very large tattoos. And those people value artistic quality and they value technical skill. So what one does in creating the rules and values or coming in contact with those, learning those rules and values, is gain a kind of aesthetic sense about what constitutes a good tattoo versus a bad tattoo. Most people who get their first tattoo know essentially nothing about tattooing. Most of the people I talked to who were getting their first tattoo had never before that time been in a tattoo studio. People do more shopping for a TV set than they do shopping for a tattoo. Just drop in and get it.
Hmm.
So what that means is a lot of people get very lousy tattoos, and that is, as one moves more into the world of tattooing, then one comes to realize what constitutes a good one and what constitutes a bad one. They recognize that they don't have a great tattoo or they have a really good tattoo, and those values become very, very important.
You said, I'm interested in that transition. A little later on in the program, we could talk about the artistry of tattooing and the fact that some tattoo artists are trying to move this into the world of fine art, and that's making some progress there. You said you got your first tattoo sort of impulsively. Is that typical?
Yes, it's very typical, and probably very unwise as well. I was actually quite fortunate, since the tattoo artist in the shop attached to the museum turned out to be a very well-known and skilled tattoo artist.
And what were you hoping to get from that first tattoo? And is that different from subsequent tattoos?
I was expecting merely to get a tattoo.
Okay.
I didn't have any larger expectations at the time. I just wanted to see what the experience is like. It seems to me, again, as an ethnographer, it seems to me that if one is to reasonably talk about what people do and how they understand what they do and how they construct the meaning of their behavior and what the world means to them, then the best way to do that is not to have them fill out a questionnaire, but instead to stay with them and live with them and in turn experience what they experience. So what I was interested in doing at the time was experience what a tattoo is like. Mm. Now, after that, of course, I, as an ethnographer, I became more involved in that world and therefore got a lot more tattoo work, because in part because I came in contact with people, as you mentioned before, who were very, very talented artists, and I wanted to collect some of their work.
What do people tell you as you study them and had conversations? They construct this larger meaning of what they're doing, either before or, I guess, during or after. What is that meaning? What are they seeking with getting the tattoos?
That became a very, very interesting issue for me. And what people are trying to do is to symbolize things that are important to them. People would try to symbolize, and this is historically a very important function of tattooing, to symbolize their connections to others. These are the people I care about. So what are called vow tattoos, the classic one being a heart with mom in it, that symbolizes that tattoo. Those kinds of tattoos symbolize one's indelible connection to others. Hmm. People are also trying to demonstrate, as you talked about before, their identities. That is, this is who I am. A fierce tattoo means I am a fierce person. I'm dangerous. A gentle tattoo means I am a kind and gentle person. It was interesting, though, that when I talked with people more about their decision to get a tattoo, they would often talk in kind of commonplace aesthetic terms. That is, I got this tattoo because I liked the color, or I got this tattoo because I thought it was pretty. And that became very interesting to me, to have this kind of folk art that people were putting on their own bodies.
Mm. Now, reaction is an interesting part of this, important. Some people are seeking a reaction. Other times it's unwelcome, I suppose. I was just thinking, the stereotypical mom, in the heart, mom maybe doesn't want Junior to get the tattoo.
That is very, very common, that people who were intimate with a person who got tattooed were rather turned off by it. At least initially. I mean, you get used to anything. I would talk with people about tattoos that I saw were obviously terrible, terrible tattoos, and that they knew were terrible tattoos. In a very poignant interview, this one woman said, "Well, yeah, I know it's a terrible tattoo, but it marks a period in my life, and when I get old, I can look at this tattoo and remember that I was young once." And now that's very touching and very nice way of thinking about a tattoo. Most people with bad tattoos either get them covered up or they get them taken off, or they just accept them in the same way, they accept that their ears stick out.
You said in the book that, I'm not sure whether this was with a piercing or a tattoo, that some people in society, after you got it, treated you even more coolly than usual. That's probably typical.
Coolly negatively?
Coolly negative.
Really cool.
Yeah.
Okay.
Coolly negatively is what I got from the passage.
Yes, they tend to. And what's interesting about getting a tattoo, particularly as one becomes more committed to tattooing, that people's responses to your tattoo come to be a message about what kind of person that is. So people who treat you coolly, or people who don't want to have anything to do with you, or people who make derogatory comments about your tattoos. One of my colleagues, when I first met her at the university, looked at my tattooed arm, which was displayed there, and she said, "Did you do that on purpose?" And that rather cooled our relationship from there on, because I saw her as the kind of person who did not share at least some of the kinds of interests and values that I did.
So there are judgments and attitudes going both ways.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely, sure.
Yeah. Well, we're going to take a brief break, and we're going to continue, of course, with Clinton Sanders, who is a professor of sociology at the University of Connecticut, author of Customizing the Body, The Art and Culture of Tattooing. Interesting perspective, because the book first came out in the 1990s, and then some 15 years passed, and then he's done a revised edition. So he's seen some changes. Some things, of course, stay the same. We'll continue this discussion on tattoos and bring in, after this break, James Zenna, owner of Sailor Jim's Electric Tattoo in Logan, a tattoo artist, and Ashley Hart, who has tattoos. She's getting them removed. We'll get that interesting perspective. Later in the program, a dermatologist, Robert Young, with Rocky Mountain Dermatology in Logan, Utah. And that all is coming up following a brief break.
Support for Utah Public Radio is provided by USU's Emma Eccles College of Education and Human Services, ranked in the top 2% of graduate schools of education with degrees in elementary, secondary, and special education. More at cehs.usu.edu. Also, support is provided by Historic Herm's Inn at 1435 East Canyon Road in Logan, open every day for breakfast and lunch, 7 until 2 p.m., with facilities for business meetings, catering, and private events. Information on Facebook and hermsinn.com. The following is an encore presentation.
Thanks for listening to Access Utah. I'm Tom Williams. Tattoos, our subject, have a full range of meaning to some in the broader society. They're off-putting. They can have people making judgments about you that perhaps you're not intending to send out. Some people in the subculture definitely want to send out some of those messages and delineate themselves as part of subculture, not part of the larger culture. We're talking for the hour with the University of Connecticut sociology professor Clinton Sanders, author of Customizing the Body, The Art and Culture of Tattooing. And we bring in now with us Ashley Hart, who has tattoos but currently are getting them removed. Want to hear your story as we go along. Ashley Hart, welcome. Thanks.
Thanks for having me on.
We also have with us in studio James Zenna, owner of Sailor Jim's Electric Tattoo in Logan. Thanks.
How you guys doing?
Professor, before we bring in our guests in studio here, I'm wondering, have you detected changes in the overall attitude of society to tattoos? You've kind of had your finger on the pulse. You write kind of a funny passage in your book that at a certain point you became, I guess, number one on the golden Rolodex for journalists, and you've been approached by journalists over a long period of time, but they want to do a tattoo story. Well, including us, we came to you. Have you detected a shift at all? Or has it remained the same attitudes toward tattoos?
No, definitely the attitudes have changed, in part because, well, it's hard to see something as terribly deviant when the police officer that stops you and gives you a ticket has a tattoo or a pierced ear. So the more widespread a particular practice, the less likely it is to be seen as weird or off-putting.
Hmm. I wonder, James Zenna, have you seen a shift in attitudes? I guess that starting first, not as the owner of a tattoo shop, but as a tattooed person, have you detected a shift in attitudes, or is it about the same?
It's kind of more of an age group thing. You know, my parents' generation, I guess people, you know, 50 years and older, it still kind of has that shock value impact with younger people in all walks of society. It often becomes more of a conversation starter than anything, perhaps because, you know, celebrities, TV shows, things like that. It's kind of introducing a lot of non-tattooed people to the art somewhat, but often those people sort of feel like there is this unity or there is this separation. And I think among tattooed people, there are really too many different reasons to do it or, you know, variables to really put us all in one box. Mm-hmm. But I haven't really run into much resistance.
I'd like to hear your...
It also depends on the community that one lives in. Mm-hmm. Because if you live in a university town, then tattooing is no big deal. If you live in a retirement community in Florida, then tattooing's a big deal. Mm-hmm. It's an off-putting phenomenon.
Yeah, I suppose the community would have to do with that. I don't know if you get, James, of course, here in Utah, a very religious state, predominant religion. It would be the same with, I guess, if you lived in an area with any other sort of predominant, any religion, because I think most religions, many religions, frown upon still tattoos. You're defacing the body as a temple.
Yeah, as far as, I guess, the kind of American Puritan culture, I would say the most reaction I have got so far was traveling through the Deep South, whereas other areas, Seattle, San Francisco, Vancouver, nobody even notices you or makes a comment. I've had similar things in Europe. Sweden, one of my friends who has facial tattoos, you know, never got a reaction anywhere we went. You know, Spain, a little more conservative, people tended to notice a lot more. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it's definitely a regional thing. As far as worldwide, though, I think tattooing is probably more common than not with many indigenous cultures. I don't think it was until kind of sort of Protestant Reformation movements and things of that nature that tattooing really became repressed. Mm-hmm. So,
and Professor, I suppose this very much has to do with the cultural norm, and in some societies, the cultural norm would be to be tattooed.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Historically, particularly tribal societies have required people to get tattoos for very similar reasons to the reasons that people get tattooed today, because the tattoo would symbolize their connections, would identify them as belonging to particular kind of social groups. Or very often tattoos were seen as medicinal or protective devices as well.
Hmm. Let me bring in Ashley Hart. When did you get your tattoos?
I got my tattoos when I was 19 years old, so about 5 years ago.
Okay. And why tattoos at that point?
It was more of the people I was hanging out with had tattoos, so it was more accepted by a lot of my friends, and it wasn't abnormal for me to have a tattoo, especially in the group of people I ran around with. And so that's kind of why I got it. It was kind of just, I've always wanted to get one, and I was of legal age, and I could do it. So I did.
What was that experience like? Were you nervous?
Yeah, not really, though. It doesn't really scare me to go and do something. I mean, I'm sure it should have, to do something so permanent. But at the time, I was like, this is awesome. I get to do something I've always wanted to do. So it fulfilled a lot of the things I wanted to do.
What reaction did you get from, say, your parents?
Well, I hid it from my parents for a long time because we're from a small town in Idaho. Right. And so the culture there doesn't accept it hardly at all. And so for a while, they didn't even know. And then I continued to add. I got two tattoos originally, and then I added two more throughout time. And eventually, I mean, my parents didn't react. They didn't resent me. But, you know, as any parent who comes from that cohort of ages, they weren't very happy about it. Mm-hmm. But it wasn't like I was this shunned, deviant child that was worshiping the devil.
Mm-hmm. And did you, when you got that first tattoo, did you go to a tattoo artist in a shop like James's, or what happened there?
Yeah, I did. I actually went to Sailor Jim's, and because I had heard great things about it, and so I knew that it was a reputable tattoo parlor, and I wasn't about to go walk in and get some sketchy work done. I actually am pleased with what I got, and so I did some research, but a lot, like the professor said, is most people, it's very impulsive, and so I remember it was like week for my 19th birthday, and they had an opening on my birthday, and I was like, perfect, it's meant to be, I'm going to do it.
James, you find a lot of people do that? It's kind of impulsive, their first one?
Yeah, I think so, and for myself included. At this point in my career, I'm generally, you know, about 2 months in advance on appointments, which I enjoy because I do get to talk to people a little bit more, feel out the tattoo, you know, and where they're going with it, and definitely try to encourage people to get pieces that they can grow old with and be happy. But, you know, often, I mean, we do change so much in our life between, you know, 18 and 30. So I like the idea of sort of growing old and accepting your youth. Some people sort of kind of want to make a fresh start. So that part's beyond my control. But generally, I try to do a tattoo that they can, you know, be happy with when they're 50 and kind of stay away from the sort of antisocial, you know, against the grain type pieces.
Professor Sanders, we've now talked a little bit with our other two guests with the permanence. Tattoo is pretty permanent. And I don't know, do people, I guess that's an attraction for a lot of people to get a tattoo. For others, it becomes a problem.
No, I think it is part of the attraction. It's really literally indelible in that it indelibly marks that. And given the way life works, that's often problematic or a mistake. The tattoo artists that I work with, would, when people ask to have somebody's name put on them, would routinely say that that's probably not a good idea. Relationships usually last less time than a tattoo does.
Yeah, that's certainly true.
The permanence is a very important issue.
So let's turn back to Ashley. So at a certain point, you decided, I don't want tattoos anymore. What went into that decision?
Well, it was about a year ago, actually, a year ago in April, and it was kind of impulsive, too. And I had thought about it for a long time, and then through research, I just started to realize that with my personality change and with the way I wanted to go in life, I needed to make a change in my appearance. And so that's why I got in contact with a place down in Salt Lake City and made appointments. And that's what I've been doing for the past year and a couple months. So
it's taken a long time.
It does. You have to wait. I mean, they estimated about 10 sessions. And when I go in, I get all four tattoos done. And in between each session, they have you wait about 6 to 8 weeks so that your skin can heal. And so I've done about 7, I think, of the removal over this past, yeah.
And still more to come?
And still more to come.
Is this a laser?
Yes, it's a laser.
Painful?
It's extremely painful. And even here, we're at the end wing of the tattoo removal, and I'm happy that I got good tattoos, but because I got such good tattoos, they're worried that it won't come off in the next 3 appointments, and so I'm going to have to extend the period for longer, and it's going to cost more money and be more timely and more painful.
a downside to the good work that James does at the shop, I guess. Will this will completely remove the tattoos? No trace left?
There are spots in my tattoos that I have actually seen the ink completely gone, and it is back to my normal skin color. And so far, I have 0 scars. I follow the routine that they tell you to do afterwards is keep it moisturized. They have certain products that you use to keep your skin healthy and so that it doesn't scar. And so I haven't had any scars, and yeah.
We talked earlier with the professor in the program about this idea of identity. You become a tattooed person. That's sort of part of your self-identity. I don't know if that happened with you, and is that also a reversal? You want to have that identity. I'm no longer a tattooed person.
Yeah. I mean, just through conversations with friends or coworkers, it eventually comes out that you have tattoos because I'm not a very reserved person. I'm kind of open about my life. And so, you know, when people talk about tattoos or they talk badly upon someone who got a tattoo, then I'm like, well, I'm tattooed and I'm a good person. And so you can't just associate me with, like, these rebellious teenagers. But
And that maybe that's part of it for you is that reaction from society that you don't want to.
Yeah. I mean, I'm going to probably stay in a culture that's similar to Logan, Utah. And so eventually there comes a point in my life that I don't want to be associated as someone who has tattoos, I guess.
Professor Sanders, I don't know what the national statistics are. I imagine there is a percentage of people who do go on to get their tattoos removed.
Yeah, there is. What I looked into and collected some data on was what I called tattoo regret. Why do you regret having a tattoo? And it was actually very rare. People who regretted having a tattoo didn't so much, well, two-thirds did not regret having a tattoo. But those that did regretted for the most part because they thought they had a bad tattoo and they wanted that changed. So a lot of what your tattoo artist there does probably is do cover-up work or working with tattoos that people have come to understand are not particularly good tattoos. And that becomes a tattoo skill in itself, to be able to do cover-up tattoos, good cover-up tattoos, and to rework tattoos so that they are good ones.
James, do you do that type of work?
Yeah, quite a bit. There wasn't really a lot of access to quality tattoo work in northern Utah, you know, up till about 10 years ago. So, yeah, I do quite a bit of cover-up and rework, and that's always nice to take something that somebody was embarrassed about, and all of a sudden they're, you know, proud to go out in a swimsuit again, and it kind of gives them a rebirth in a sense. And often, too, when people are unhappy with a tattoo, it's often maybe the experience that went along with it, you know, a bad relationship or a bad time in their life. And I think that can kind of, you know, attach itself to the tattoo, because sometimes I'll see a tattoo that is pretty good, but because it was done as part of a bad experience in their life, they want it altered somewhat. So
we're talking, if you just joined us in this hour, about tattoos. Obviously, we're talking with Ashley Hart, who has tattoos. She's currently getting them removed. James Zena, owner of Sailor Jim's Electric Tattoo in Logan. And we're spending the hour with Clinton Sanders, professor of sociology at University of Connecticut, author of Customizing the Body, the Art and Culture of Tattooing. And we're going to bring in here briefly Dr. Robert Young, dermatologist at Rocky Mountain Dermatology in Logan. James, I wanted to talk, and the professor has some extensive passages in his book about tattooing as art. And how this is even, we'll talk to the professor about how this is even moving into the realm of fine art. You consider yourself an artist? You look at it that way?
Yeah, it's a combination of a craft and an art form. I've been drawing most of my life, but I also worked some years as a welder and metal worker. So it's I see similarities between the two. Slightly different in art in that we often have to work with our clients' ideas. But it's also kind of more in the same vein as, say, graffiti or, I guess, street art, that type of thing, in the fact that it can't be ever resold. And there is that impermanence in the fact that, you know, anywhere from 10 to 40 years from now, your piece will be gone and, you know, worm food in the ground. Mm-hmm. So there is some interesting aspects, but yeah, the creativity and hard work in the tattoo community now is staggering, and many tattoo artists do, you know, a lot of painting. Some have even left tattooing entirely to focus on their art and painting. You can see it in Juxtapose magazine, just a huge movement of art that is influenced by kind of the counterculture. And I think tattooing is kind of fed back into that as well as become influenced by it. You know, Ed Roth, Robert Williams, you know, even Banksy, a well-known graffiti artist. It's all coming together in that sense. So it's an exciting time to be a tattooist.
Professor, I wonder if you could expand on it. You talk in your book about how the tattoo artists, at least some of them, are making a move to have this accepted as fine art.
Yeah, some do and some don't. Some see the movement of tattooing into fine art as being too, as moving it away from its kind of about Juxtapose magazine, which is fairly, you know, presents a kind of street level lowbrow art that the people who do that kind of art really value. It's set apart from what they call art school art. And so some people in the tattoo world don't much like the whole idea that tattooing is becoming fine art. It, however, that definition, of course, works to the advantage of some tattoo artists who can sell their work more broadly to a different clientele and get attention within a larger world that provides them with status. They could even, like Ed Hardy, move from being a tattoo artist to working in other forms of art to being, like now, a fashion magnate. So it becomes, having one's work defined as fine art works against the interests of some, but for the interests of most. I mean, calling oneself a tattoo artist and working in a tattoo studio instead of a tattoo parlor become very important symbolic things.
We bring in now dermatologist Dr. Robert Young, dermatologist, Rocky Mountain Dermatology in Logan. I want to get perspective from a dermatologist. By the way, welcome, Dr. Young.
Thank you.
I don't know what your attitude is toward tattooing.
Well, I have had the advantage of being born and raised in Portland, Oregon, a very eclectic, accepting culture, and then spent 16 years in the Navy. So, and then going into dermatology, I've seen tons and tons of wonderful, amazing, beautiful tattoos, and more than my share of very not-so-nice tattoos in many ways. Mm. So I've seen it from both sides, and I personally don't have any axe to grind one way or the other. They don't affect me at all, but I have seen it from both sides, beautiful art and people that would give and do anything to have it removed.
As a dermatologist, what are your concerns? What would your advice be to anyone who's considering a tattoo?
Well, back in the older days, infection and things that really aren't so much a concern these days for people going to a professional like James, but people do have to realize there are some things to think about. Besides the obvious ones, excellent points that have been made about, the analogy of TV shopping. For someone getting a tattoo, you have to realize two things. You will change, and the tattoo will change. And so you have to go into it thinking the tattoo is going to be permanent. Now, what do I mean when it changes? It's going to, over time, smudge, migrate, become blurred to some extent. Maybe not the type that we see from World War II veterans, but there's still going to be that as the body migrates some of that ink and organic salts and things that are used into the system and into the dermis. So the lines are going to be blurred, not as crisp. The picture's not going to be the same, not to mention the changing of the skin, the musculature, and the dermis itself.
So it sounds like back in the day, might have been infection would be your number one concern. Now you would just, sounds like, advise people consider that there will be some changes as things go on.
Exactly. The medical issues they're not minor if it happens to you, but as far as incidence goes, they're not that common. People can and do get individual reactions to some of the inorganic salts used, such as mercury for red, cadmium for yellow, chromium for green, cobalt for blue. If someone has an allergy or develops an allergy to one of those things, that has been put into their dermis, and their body is going to react in one of several different ways. And sometimes it can be severe. Now, that's not common. But when you do see it, it can be severe and require medical attention. That wouldn't be the main issue, I think, for someone getting or not getting a tattoo, but the two things would be the change of the tattoo, in my mind, and secondly, if they want it off in the future, they need to know, like Ashley has learned, that it's going to take a lot of time, it's going to be very painful, and despite Ashley's excellent results are not going to be guaranteed. Mm. You've got an issue of both technology and skill, much like James's skill in placing a tattoo, removing a tattoo just right. You can do everything perfect and still have scarring, pigment disruption, and people are going to have to sign a release form saying results can't be guaranteed.
What would you suggest a person who wanted to remove their tattoo?
don't just follow an advertisement, a sign, or something that you see. Get referrals from people, people like James that do tattoos would likely know the best people to go to that have the skill and the technology. Someone that has just maybe one laser is perhaps going to be advertising that they can remove tattoos. That's absolutely not the person you want to go to. With the different colors and depths, you're going to need different fluences, different wavelengths of and different types of lasers completely. There's just not one that's going to do it for everybody.
Professor, we're coming down to just have about 3 minutes left, and I wonder, looking to the future, this is always a hard thing, but I'll put you on the spot a bit, to predictions. Tattooing becoming even more mainstreamed, and if so, what will that mean?
I think it'll continue on as a popular element of the culture. Certainly technology will change. I think maybe James is working with a rotary machine instead of a coil machine these days. That technology has changed. They have inks now that are being used that are easier for the doctor to take off. So that might change as well. I used to joke that in the not-too-distant future, there will probably be tattoo vending machines in which you put in some money and stick your arm in and choose a design, and you pull out a tattoo that's already sterilized and bandaged.
Hmm.
I doubt if that's actually going to happen these days.
I wonder what your reaction, James, would be to a tattoo vending machine.
Well, they could construct it like a CNC mill, but yeah. You'd be in big trouble if you flinched.
Yeah, I guess so.
That's true.
That would be hard. You mentioned, Professor, and I've been reading about this in your book, new inks, easier to remove, and so the tattoo, I guess, isn't quite as permanent as before. That kind of changes what a tattoo would mean, wouldn't it?
Yeah, it certainly does. Perhaps for the better. I think the fact that people are not entirely aware of the issues that both James and the doctor raise is a real problem within the tattooing world. And I think what some of the tattoo artists that I worked with would do with people is to put on a non-permanent tattoo, a tattoo that you could take off with alcohol, and have them just try it out for a while. See if they liked that addition to themselves and what impact that had on the relationships.
Hmm.
But, it would change how one thought about themselves and how one thought about the tattoo and the tattoo decision.
Ashley, I wonder if someone came to you for advice. I want to get a tattoo. Having gone through your experience, what would you tell them?
I've had lots of friends come to me saying that they want tattoos, and you know, it's not really my choice.
Mm-hmm.
I am one of the few, or I don't even know what the percentage is, but I'm one of those people that decided I didn't want them anymore. And there are tons of people that decide they still want them after 50 years. And so what it all comes down to is a personal choice. And if you're willing to make a choice and then eventually have to have something removed, then that's fine. But I can't really dictate whether I tell people to get tattoos or not. It's... I'm not really against or I'm not really for tattoos. I'm neutral.
Hmm.
I'm Sweden.
You've got a few more treatments left, and your hope is to be completely removed.
Yeah, I think it's going to stretch over, and we're going to have to do a couple more, but that was something I was aware of prior to going into this.
Yeah. James, you still have people coming in, I guess, wanting to do that, make that transition, become a tattooed person. And you have conversations with those people, I guess? What do they tell you? Does the reason stay the same over the years is why they want tattoos?
I think really the main difference now is you're getting more people that are getting the one-time kind of memorial tattoo, a cancer ribbon, a tribute, maybe older people. They're not trying to align themselves with any culture necessarily, but it's just another way to mark a significant moment. And I think in times of tragedy, sometimes you want something that's just really primal. There is that ritual aspect of it, the pain, the giving up, the permanent change to your body. And that's a very powerful thing. And I think it will be a sad time when people do get tattoos off and on or change, just like hair color. I hope that doesn't happen.
We'll have to leave it there. We're out of time. We could continue the discussion, but out of time. We've been talking for the hour with Clinton Sanders, professor of sociology at University of Connecticut. The book is Customizing the Body, the Art and Culture of Tattooing. Professor, thanks so much.
Thank you, Tom.
And we've been joined here in the segment by Dr. Robert Young, dermatologist at Rocky Mountain Dermatology in Logan. Thanks.
Thanks for having me.
Ashley Hart has been with us. Thanks so much.
You're welcome.
And James Zeno, owner of Sailor Jim's Electric Tattoo in Logan. Thanks.
Thank you very much.
And thanks for listening to Access Utah.
Support for Utah Public Radio is provided by Dr. Carl Breitenbach, practicing evidence-based family medicine at Basin Clinic in Vernal since 1987, with emphasis in complete family health, including obstetric and pediatric care. Information is at basinclinic.com.
On the next Putumayo World Music Hour,
we'll head down under for music from Australia and New Zealand.
Do you come from a land down under? Women glow and men plunder.
I'm Dan Storper.
And I'm Rosalie Howard. Join us for the next Putumayo World Music Hour.
Friday night at 10 here on Utah Public Radio.
Welcome to Wild About Utah, a partnership of the Stokes Nature Center, the Bridgerland Audubon Society, and Utah Public Radio.
This is Linda Curvin for Bridgerland Audubon Society. One of the best storytellers in Utah's national parks is not a ranger, but the lowly pack rat. Their stories of change in past plant communities are written in their middens. The midden is a heap of leaves, twigs, seeds, and fruits the pack rat discards outside its nest. Protected in a desert cave or rock crevice and preserved by a rat's own urine, this heap is a detailed and accurate time capsule of the past local flora. Ken Cole of the U.S. Geological Survey is a fluent translator of the pack rat stories. Ken and colleagues sampled old pack rat nests around Glen Canyon National Recreation Area and Capitol Reef National Park. By carbon-14 dating, the nest ages are known to span the last 10,000 years. As controls, they also collected nests from mesa tops inaccessible to livestock. Ken and colleagues then carefully translated these pack rat stories by identifying and counting the plant fragments in these fossil nests. At both Capitol Reef and Glen Canyon, old pack rat nests revealed pre-settlement plant communities that were rich in diverse grasses, wildflowers, and shrubs. Then these floras changed. Beginning 150 years ago, vast herds of sheep and cattle tromped and chewed their way across the unfenced rangelands of Utah in numbers unimaginable today. We know that palatable plant species and those susceptible to trampling suffered declines because they are absent from middens from that time period. Unpalatable shrubs multiplied. Despite curtailed grazing in subsequent decades at Capitol Reef and Glen Canyon, pack rats show us that the flora still has not recovered. Like Aesop's fables, this cautionary lesson of the pack rat's ecological tale remains clear and relevant today. This is Linda Curvin for Bridgerland Audubon Society.
Wild About Utah is a partnership of the Stokes Nature Center, the Bridgerland Audubon Society, and Utah Public Radio. For transcripts and archived audio of Wild About Utah, go online to upr.org and click on the Wild About Utah link. Support for Wild About Utah on Utah Public Radio is made possible in part by our listeners and the Quinney College of Natural Resources at Utah State University, where students and faculty promote the sustainability of ecosystems and the communities that depend on them. Information at cnr.usu.edu.
Access Utah is a production of Utah Public Radio. You can listen to this episode or previous episodes of Access Utah anytime at upr.org, where you can find a link to subscribe to our podcast. This is Utah Public Radio, KUSR HD1 89.5 Logan, KUSK HD1 88.5 Vernal, KUSL HD1 89.3 Richfield, KUST HD1 88.7 Moab, and KUSU FM HD1 91.5 Logan.